We are ready to move to the regular agenda and start with 9:37, please.
Add the Portland Police Honor Guard to the list of organizations eligible to use the voluntary payroll deduction system.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Lieutenant Chris Davis with the Police Bureau. You know me most recently from the Traffic Division, but I'm also a member of our Honor Guard, which performs ceremonial duties at functions like retiree funerals, on-duty deaths. Fortunately, we haven't had one of those in a long time, but also for other agencies in the region.
And the League of Oregon Cities.
Yes.
Last week.
And we also provide these services at different events throughout the year. The police memorials, both locally here and in surrounding agencies, and then the state police memorial at DPSST every year with the Oregon State Police, and a whole host of various parades and other appropriate community events. And another thing that we do is try to send two of our members to Washington, D.C. for the National Police Memorial, along with thousands of other officers from agencies all over the United States. The Honor Guard is independent of the city's budget. It runs entirely on a donation fund. And unfortunately, our yearly donation that we depend on that comes through our employee assistance program every year was about a little less than half this year what it usually is. And so we are out of money. So what we are asking is that we can add the Honor Guard to the list of things in the police bureau that police employees can voluntarily donate money to out of payroll deduction, which requires your permission. So we would appreciate your support with that effort.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Lieutenant Davis? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Any public testimony on this item?
I did not have a sign-up sheet for this.
Okay, it's emergency ordinance. Let's vote.
Novick?
Thank you very much for bringing this before us. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for your service. Aye.
Fish.
I am honored to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Thank you. Aye. Done. Okay, 9:38, and let's see. We want to try to do 9:38, 9:39, and 9:41 together.
9:38.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, maybe I've got that wrong.
9:38.
9:38.
You're pulling.
9:38, we take. Back to my office.
Update and replace City of Portland debt management policies.
So if there's no objection, we're going to refer that one back. And then we'll take 9:39, 9:41, 9:42.
9:39, adopt City of Portland investment policy. 9:40, create a temporary advisory committee charged with making recommendations to council about incorporating socially responsible criteria for the City of Portland's direct investment in corporate securities. And 9:42, provide the city treasurer with a council-approved list, including one specific corporation in which the city shall not directly invest its cash assets.
Morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Novick, do you want to open this discussion or do you want to turn it over to Jeff?
I think that the treasurer maybe should proceed with 9:39 first, and then I'll open the discussion on 9:41 and 9:42.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Cooperman, City Treasurer, and I'm here to discuss with you the city's investment policy. The investment policy establishes the framework within which the city invests its cash assets, and the treasurer's office implements this policy. The policy is a set of conservative parameters that is written in accordance with ORS and which is brought before council for adoption each year. The investment policy was reviewed by both the Oregon State Treasurer's Short-Term Fund Board and by the city's Investment Advisory Committee, which is comprised of members of the public experienced in the financial markets. To frame this discussion, I'd like to highlight some statistics. Over the course of the year, the city's portfolio ranges from $600 million to $1.2 billion and averages around $900 million. The investable cash assets include receipts from the city's operations beyond what's needed for daily liquidity, tax payments that are made to the city, bond proceeds until spent on projects that are being financed, and our reserves. The investment objectives are to preserve principal, ensure liquidity, and to earn a market return. All investment earnings, net of an administrative fee to cover Treasury's operating costs, are distributed to city funds. In fiscal year 13, that ended June 30, we distributed $4.3 million to city funds, and that was based on an average portfolio yield over that year of 0.474%. So that's just a tad over 47 basis points. There are 100 basis points in a percent. We're recommending that two policy changes be made to the city's current investment policy. The first change relates to investments in U.S. agency securities and would allow purchases of agency securities that are up to 5 years in maturity. And agency securities are Fannie Mae securities, Freddie Mac securities, home loan securities, Farmer Mac securities. The maximum maturity of agency bonds that's allowed under the current policy is 3 years or less. The change would allow flexibility for us to invest in longer-term agency securities when market conditions are favorable. In today's agency market, for example, there's an additional 75 basis points in yield if we can go from a 3-year security to a 5-year security. For each $1 million invested, that's an additional $7,500 per year. And it's important to note that as we're talking about being able to extend in maturity for agencies, we're not recommending any change to the overall portfolio weighted average maturity of 8 months. That still remains intact. The second change we're recommending relates to a specific reference in ORS that allows investments in lower single A rated corporate debt securities if they're issued by Oregon entities, as opposed to the AA rated minimum rating requirement for corporate bonds overall. The Oregon entity must either have its headquarters in Oregon, employ greater than 50% of its workforce, permanent workforce in Oregon, or have greater than 50% of its tangible assets in Oregon. This change would give investment staff additional opportunities to diversify our corporate investments and provide flexibility to purchase bonds issued by Oregon corporations such as Nike or Intel that today, because they're single A rated, we can't buy. The rest of the recommended changes are housekeeping or are to conform the city's policy with the Oregon State Treasurer's model policy language and in all cases reflects current practice. The investment policy requires that City Council adopt the policy itself annually. Treasury will continue to bring the policy forward to you and invite public comment during that process. Thank you.
Okay. Questions for Jennifer?
I'm just curious, are there other corporations, Oregon corporations besides Nike and Intel that are in that A rating? And if you have, I don't know, some other names to toss out there, that'd be...
There's a handful of other names. Bear with me just 1 second. It would be Intel, Nike, Northwest Natural Gas, Pacific Corp, Precision Cast Parts. There may be one other. It's a relatively small universe, but they're very recognizable names because they are so active in the state of Oregon.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Great. Any other questions? Great. Thank you very much. Do we have anyone signed up to testify on this?
For 939, I had one person, Mark Hoffhines.
Okay. Nope. Okay. He's waving that. All right. Then this is a resolution. Do you want to go ahead and act on this, Steve, and then take up the other two?
Yeah.
All right. Then let's act on this one, please.
Novick?
I am very pleased that you think it's appropriate for us to have additional flexibility to invest in the bonds of Oregon-centered corporations. So I'm glad to see that. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for your diligence and for these updates. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yeah, thank you for these changes. Both of those sound like really good changes, particularly investing in Oregon companies, but also longer-term maturities, federal-based maturities. So thank you. Aye.
Roll call on 939.
Thank you, Steve, for your leadership.
This is actually...
I had nothing to do with this one.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for your leadership.
Keep trying.
Aye.
Hales.
Thank you. Aye. Okay, now let's move to 940 and 941. Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Several months ago, I received an email from a Portlander asking about the topic of divestment from, asking if the city was going to join other cities in divesting from fossil fuel companies. Doing some research in response to that email, I discovered that the city did not have any sort of socially responsible investment criteria that we applied in determining whether to buy corporate bonds or commercial paper. And it seemed to me that it was appropriate for us to start using such criteria to take a look at the impact corporations have on our society and our environment before making a decision to loan the money, which is what buying bonds does. So bringing to, in conversations with the treasurer said that she did not feel that it made sense for a variety of reasons for us to present her with criteria that she would then apply in making investment decisions. She thought that what she could work with best is counsel giving her a list of companies that we felt did not meet our criteria and that she should not buy. So we agreed to try to work with that structure. And the first of these resolutions would establish a committee to advise us on how best to start incorporating socially responsible criteria into our investments. It would establish a committee that with members of which would be appointed by the mayor, hopefully with the significant input from council members, which would include a representative from the labor community, a representative from the environmental community, a representative from the business community, and a specialist in somebody with expertise in corporate ethics. And the committee would meet until at the latest July of next year and give us some advice on how to start incorporating social responsibility criteria into our investments. Two specific options which we would ask that committee to consider are establishing a standing committee of citizens, which would advise us, or hiring an investment advisor with sort of experience in the socially responsible investment arena to advise us. And the resolution states that the criteria that we would want to use and that we would want the advisory committee to consider in determining how best to incorporate criteria would be, does the company engage in abusive labor practices? Does it engage in practices that are damaging to human health or the environment? Does it engage in practices that are generally unethical, such as engaging in bribery or in deceptive marketing practices? Does the company engage in extreme forms of tax avoidance? Or does the company exercise such a degree of market dominance as to disrupt normal competitive market forces? I'll dwell a little bit on those last two because I noted that a local publication expressed particular concern about them. I'll start with tax avoidance. I mean, it is true that most companies do their best to limit the amount of taxes they pay, but not all of them go to the extreme of, for example, setting up foreign subsidiaries for the sole purpose of evading taxes by shifting assets and income to those subsidiaries. Not every multinational uses such exotic strategies as the double Irish or the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. And when these companies do engage in such strategies, it does have an impact on the city. Because when companies evade federal taxes, it reduces the federal government's ability to do things like, for example, invest in affordable housing. And we are in this city suffering the impact of federal disinvestment in affordable housing. So I think that having tax avoidance as an item on our corporate responsibility list is appropriate. As far as market dominance is concerned and misuse of market dominance, corporations may feel that it's in their interest to engage in, for example, predatory pricing, and banks may feel it's in their interest in to become too big to fail, but that does not necessarily mean that we think it's good for society for companies to engage in predatory pricing or to have banks that are too big to fail. So I think we should consider those factors in deciding when to invest. Now, I recognize that there are a few saints in the ranks of major corporations as in the ranks of humans. So what I would anticipate is that we would not put companies on the do not buy list just because at some point one of them has run afoul of one of these criteria. My expectation is we'd focus on companies that have a somewhat significant history of running afoul of several of the criteria or being really extreme in one regard. I mean, we probably wouldn't invest in Murder, Inc., even if it didn't engage in any other reprehensible behavior. So the first of these resolutions would say we're going to establish this advisory committee, and the advisory committee will come up with an idea as to how to implement these criteria, and in particular, we'll study two options, which are not necessarily mutually exclusive. One is creating a standing citizen advisory committee to help develop a list, a do-not-buy list, and one would be hiring an investment advisor. And the standing committee would be expected to complete its work by next July, hopefully earlier. The second resolution would establish a do-not-buy list starting now and lasting through next year, which consists of one company, that being Walmart. And I felt comfortable bringing this list of one company to council because Walmart has a very well-documented history of running afoul of several of these criteria. One of those is abuse of its workers in the United States and overseas, locking people in its stores, making people work off the clock. There are examples of Walmart's insensitivity to its workers in the fairly recent past. Just last year, Walmart further reduced the number of employees that are eligible for health insurance. When it comes to corporate ethics, the New York Times last year had an extensive article on Walmart using bribery as a regular business practice in its Mexican operations and having an internal investigation into that, which they decided to shut down in 2006. And early this year, we learned that Walmart's current CEO, Michael Duke, was made aware of this issue as early as 2005. And again, Walmart decided not to let this issue see the light of day. And finally, Walmart does, in fact, use its market dominance to disrupt normal market forces. If you take a look at Charles Fishman's book, The Walmart Effect, one of the things you'll see is that Walmart has set this country well on the road to being, in effect, a Soviet-style centrally planned economy, with its headquarters being in Bentonville, Arkansas, as opposed to Moscow. I mean, Walmart actually has the power to tell manufacturers how to manufacture their products, because if you're not doing business with Walmart, to a great extent in America, you're not doing business. So they can essentially demand that manufacturers dilute the quality of their products in order to keep doing business with Walmart. That's Walmart's business model, but to me, it is frightening for the country. So based on these three factors, I submit that we should adopt a resolution saying that we're starting off with one company on the do-not-buy list, and that is Walmart. Now, I know that the question will come up, what can Portland do? What difference does it make what little Portland does on its own? And my answer is Fortune 500 companies might not care too much about what Portland does, but I expect that if one city steps forward and establishes socially responsible investment criteria, other cities will follow, and hopefully states. And I think that if enough cities and states follow our lead and corporations discover that their business practices make it more difficult for them to raise capital, they might change those business practices. Another question is, what is the cost of establishing such do-not-buy lists? Well, as far as Walmart itself is concerned, what the treasurer says is that the difference between earnings between the $36 million the city currently owns in Walmart and earnings of an equal amount of treasury bonds would be about $163,000. If it so happened that our only option at the time we bought the Walmart bonds had been to buy treasury bonds. If other corporate bonds had been available with a yield in between treasuries and Walmart, or the same as Walmart, then it would have had less or no effect on our earnings. I might add as an aside that if the federal government keeps on running up to the brink of defaulting, perhaps the earnings on treasury bonds might improve too, although that's not something that I would wish. Again, the list of companies from which we can buy bonds or commercial paper is already quite constrained by the financial criteria the treasurer applies. Right now, in terms of bonds, there's about 40 to 45 such companies, although it fluctuates. So again, I would expect us to be judicious in using these criteria, and in most cases say that we would only put companies on the do not buy list that violate several of them, because we don't want the list to get down to like three. But I think that it is high time that we adopted some sort of socially responsible investment criteria. And the first resolution would establish a process for establishing a do not buy list in the future. And the second resolution would establish a small list for the present.
Thank you. Questions, Commissioner Novick? Any further questions for staff?
If I might go.
Please.
That would be great. Thank you. First of all, thank you, Commissioner Novick, for bringing these forward and for the dialogue that has happened amongst the council one-on-one. Mayor, I would like your commitment that at least two of the committee will be women.
Reasonable request.
And what is your answer to that
request?
Thank you very much. And secondly, I have a friendly amendment to the list of socially responsible criteria, and that is to add to health concerns, including weapons production. But there isn't a specific listing of where weapons production comes in. That is definitely a health concern.
I think that's a Emily reasonable clarification.
Thank you. And then on the second item, why is there a sunset on the when we can not invest in Walmart?
Well, the idea is to establish an annual list, and the point of saying that the list expires at the end of the year is if a company should happen to change its behavior, so they would no longer run afoul of our criteria, that we wouldn't want it on the do not buy list. And I think that we should establish a process which requires us to go back and take a look at the list and take a look at the company's behavior again and not assume that because a company was on a do not buy list in 1 year that its conduct is going to be the same the next year.
I would prefer an affirmative action to get them back on, but I understand the rationale for that. And plus, we are having the committee that will look at that. Why are we not divesting from Walmart right now?
My thinking was that it's in buying the bonds that we are contributing to a market for Walmart bonds, making it easier for them to raise capital, that when we sell the bonds is whether we wait for them to mature or sell them is less relevant. Also, of course, if we sold them, we'd be trying to get somebody else to violate our own principles by buying bonds. So it seemed cleaner to simply say, we're not going to buy anymore, and therefore we're not going to contribute to the market for them.
Okay, great. Thank you. And do we have to vote on my friendly amendment, or is that just accepted by the sponsor?
We're changing the language of the resolution. We might want to add it specifically to one of those whereases.
So it's in the list in the resolution. After health concerns, it's in the be it further resolved on a big paragraph on the back page. There's a list that the council charges the committee with studying the city's current investment policy, and then it lists a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm suggesting to add after health concerns, including weapons production.
So moved.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Roll call on substituting the amended language.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you, Commissioner. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
Okay, that's what's before us. Now, for any further questions for staff or Jennifer, do you have any comments about this?
I have just a question, two questions for the sponsor. Steve, my wife is a public employee. She has an option through TIA CREF, which provides her benefit. She brought that with her from another university, so she's covered TIA CREF. They have a social choice option, which actually has done very well compared to the other options. So there's in the public pension arena, there's a lot of work that's been done to do some screening and to come up with this. Is it your intention that we would somehow connect the advisory committee to either the state treasurer's office or someone who has some oversight on that to get the benefit of what existing screening is being done through social choice investments through pensions?
I would certainly expect I would certainly hope that the advisory committee would look at all useful sources of information to aid them in their deliberations. So, yes.
And then structurally, what's the treasurer's role going forward vis-a-vis the advisory committee? How do you envision them interacting?
Well, the treasurer made it clear that the ideal thing for her is simply for counsel to give her a do not buy list. So I don't think there really would be direct interaction between the advisory committee and the treasurer. The advisory committee would make recommendations to us. We would use the advisory committee would use their recommendations to us on the process that we would follow. We would then decide on a process which could include having a standing committee to advise us on a do not buy list or hiring an investment advisor to do the same thing. I could include one of those. And then based on what those advisors told us, we would give another do not buy list to the treasurer. So the treasurer's role would simply be to follow what we would tell her.
Final question, Steve. You alluded to this in your excellent introductory comments, but is it truly the fact that no other city or state has implemented such a screen for its bond purchases?
I don't think that any other city has done precisely what we're talking about. Katie, I'm going to ask Katie Schreiber and my staff to elaborate.
We didn't do an exhaustive search, but we found examples of other cities and local governments that are not investing in categories of industries like fossil fuel companies or tobacco companies or gun manufacturers. We didn't find any other cities that are applying criteria in quite this way.
We did find that the government of Norway and at least one large Dutch pension fund have come up with do not buy list, which happened to include Walmart.
You know, just another observation, Steve. On Friday, I went out with the DES crew on the river to look at Superfund sites. And one of the most shocking Superfund sites that we visited was the location where a manufacturer of Agent Orange and a manufacturer of DDT on the river dumped directly into the river. They, once upon a time, were local businesses who are now part of the Superfund thing. So it kind of frames in rather stark terms this question of what is socially responsible investing, and would we a generation ago have provided tax breaks and other incentives to encourage industry like that from locating in our backyard, and what are the long-term health and environmental consequences of doing so? So there is a connection. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Bishop.
If I might add one point, the Investment Advisory Committee may be able to play a role in this analysis as well. They're quite familiar with the Oregon revised statutes. They're familiar with the city's investment policy. They work with other jurisdictions and may be able to provide a view and input on how to implement this view going forward.
Am I correct in assuming that the mayor appoints and the council confirms?
For the Investment Advisory Committee?
For the committee?
Council approves the appointment of members of the Investment Advisory Committee.
So like a lot of other things, the mayor technically appoints, but then it comes to us for approval?
Yes.
Actually, for the committee. Right, for the Investment Advisory Committee. For the advisory committee, for the temporary advisory committee we were establishing here, actually our language just proposed that the mayor would appoint with our input.
Comes to council.
Appointments still come to council, though, I think.
Typically, they come to council even if it's on consent.
Yeah.
just so okay. there's a process. Right. Was there a reason why we wouldn't do that? I'm not questioning the mayor's judgment on this. I just want to understand the protocol.
Not really, to be honest. Do we need to change the language, Katie? Do you think?
I think so.
That?
I think they all do.
They all do. Okay.
My point was that they're going to be there at the end of the day. There'll be two committees. Right. There's this committee that we're talking about with five people, and then there's separately the already existing investment advisory committee with three members.
I believe that the record is clear that the intent is the mayor appoints, but they come to council in the ordinary course.
I think there's a charter provision that says board and commission appointments come here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we're not overriding the normal course.
Okay.
Are there term limits on the investment advisory committee?
They serve, it's either 2-year or 3-year terms, and they can be reappointed.
Thank you.
By the way, there's one other point I wanted to put on the record, which is the list of companies that meet our financial criteria is constantly changing, and we would expect that whatever committees or investment advisors were helping us implement these criteria would look at, wait a minute, they'd look at a broad range of corporations that probably focus on the ones that actually are eligible based on financial criteria. So I would assume that we can set up a process whereby the treasurer can advise us and our advisory committees when new companies are coming on the list and old ones are going off.
And while the market is incredibly dynamic, that list does change, but it's not a daily type of change the way interest rates might move every day. So, yes, we can do that.
Okay. Other points that you want to get in the record here, Treasurer Cooperman? Katie? Thank you. Okay, stand by in case we need you some more, and I'm sure we have some public testimony on this.
Yes, I have four people signed up for 941. The first three, Mark Hoffhines, Sandy Polchuk, and Angela Hammett.
Come on up. Good morning, Mark. I think you're on first.
All right. My name is Mark Hoffhines. I was just curious if you guys all received my email this morning from last night. I know this is kind of off topic, but you know, this
stay
is,
on topic because
it still want to state it for the record that you know we had an incident where Engstrom, in particular, came down and rousted us and was actually very violent with an animal and very abusive with an animal, and I'd like to make sure it was stated on record and let the public know what's going on, because these kind of actions need to stop, especially just because we're out in the open, or we're trying to stay dry underneath the bridge. Is you know, it's not plausible for us to have any other place without any option. Yeah, I commend your staff, Charlie Hales, on the fact that they're actually working with me on getting a locker house and implement a homeless shelter as well. They're writing that up, and I compliment you guys on that. But this officer actually definitely needs to be reprimanded for his abusive actions. And I just want to state that for the record. Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning. Welcome.
And, sir, you can file a complaint with the Independent Police Review, Mr. Hoffhines. You should stop up to the auditor's office and file a complaint with the Independent Police Review.
I will most definitely do that because I do have the video footage from up close, and I will actually submit it to them as well because this is the second time I've actually been rousted and harassed by police officers personally, and involved.
That's how you get it into the record and into the system.
Yeah.
Is to go
forward. Well, I want the public to be aware of it as well. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you bring it down just a little bit so we can hear you?
There you go.
How's that? Hey, Mayor Hales. And commissioners, so we think that's too much. I'm Sandy Polishuk. I live in Portland. I'm here to support these resolutions and the concept of socially responsible investment, something I've personally been involved in for a number of years. But I'm also here as a representative of 350 PDX, a part of 350.org, to advocate for this resolution. And Commissioner Novak, we're very pleased to hear that 350 PDX had a part in triggering these resolutions. We're also pleased that environmental concerns are included as a criteria for the advisory committee to consider, and that Commissioner Novak has assured us that it was his intention to include investment in fossil fuel companies in that phrase. I'm not going to bore you with the details of why the city's actions to do our part in curbing climate change is crucial, or why carbon and the burning of fossil fuel is the biggest culprit. I've talked to you about this before, and I think you all understand the seriousness of the issue. We're also pleased that Mayor Hales declared last June on World Environment Day that while he was proud of our city, proud that our city holds no direct fossil fuels assets in our financial investment portfolio, it's not enough, unquote. We look forward to Portland living up to its progressive reputation by passing this resolution today, and in the near future to a binding resolution directing the treasurer of the city to ensure that none of the city's directly held or commingled assets include holdings in fossil fuel public equities and corporate bonds, as determined by the carbon tracker list, which within 5 years and cease any new investments in such assets, as well as urge the state of Oregon to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you.
Was there an Angela Hammett? Okay. The next three are Crystal Ilinski, Charles Johnson, and Joe Walsh.
Yep. It's okay. Crystal, you're on first.
Okay. Oh, then I need to sit
there. That's okay. You don't have to sit. You don't have to sit in the same order.
Okay. It's Crystal Ilinski again, representing 10,000 concerned Oregonians, and gosh, it feels so good to finally talk about the elephant in the room. Thank you, Commissioner Novick. Oh, my gosh. I mean, right here in Portland, why do we give our money to, like, Intel and the Precision Cast Parts? I think I mentioned that. But we're also still a Superfund site, and we can't get this cleaned up. And we're willing to give Terminal 4 to another toxic waste dump. I know I mentioned coal earlier, but we're just giving funds to these, where did we put our money? Why do we need to invest it in these places anyway? And it has to stop. It seems really hard to get out of the cycle of our history of putting our money in really unethical places. And it can start. It can start right now. It would be, I was trying to pull out this wonderful book I've been reading recently. At the Jack London Bar, they have these history sessions. By the way, Scott Fernandez was kicked out of the, I don't know if you know about Scott Fernandez from the Water Bureau, water issues, but he was kicked off of the McMenamin's history talks, targeted. That was very interesting. But these people that speak the truth don't need to be silenced. Anyway, there's a good one. This is Wicked Portland. There we go. And it's funny because right before I read this was Portland Confidential about just the history of the sort of dealings we have. And as a city, we need to be ethical. We need to think about the environment, where our investments go. Speaking of AIPAC, why keep going to these AIPAC meetings, Commissioner Fritz, et cetera? Where are we putting our money? Who are we supporting? So it is high time to talk about this. Thank you for bringing out the elephant in the room. And everybody, read these books, Portland Confidential, Wicked Portland, and come down to City Hall and commend them when they need to be commended. You have incredible people that come here, fill up the room to testify and give in their comments and offer to volunteer for free. We can break the yoke, the chains that bind us of the Portland Development Commission, the Portland Business Alliance, AIPAC, et cetera, and these incredibly polluting companies that somehow, oh, God, Penny Pritzker and Hank Paulson, how did they get our money? Wow, it's incredible. Thank you for taking the first step.
Thank you. Charles?
Charles Johnson. Five?
That is now.
It takes a second.
While we talk, I'm very glad to see the council looking at the issue of social responsibility and investment. And we do want to be sure that even the companies that are contributing well to living wages in this economy, we don't want to give them a free pass. So we want to remind the community that the council will take into consideration, maybe even have comment on issues of when Nike departs from good labor standards in foreign assembly, and that our good friends at Intel sometimes forget to talk about released toxins at their plants that have been operating for a while. And I'm not saying that that bars a company from investment, but I think that we're starting a process here of mutual reinforcement to the highest standard. And so this is an excellent move. I look forward to your passing it.
Thank you. Joe, good morning.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice, and I'm hoarse from yelling last night. It is an absolute pleasure to say to Commissioner Novick, I fully support what you're trying to do. Many of my friends and some family members shop at Walmart, and I've always had this terrible dilemma because the prices at Walmart are very low. And the reason is that they are huge. And what they say to their people that supply them is, you will do it our way or we will destroy you. That's the way they do business. That's why their prices are so low. They eat small businesses in the area. They just eat them. They can't compete. A small business cannot compete with Walmart in any sense of the word. So this is a really exciting kind of step that you guys are thinking about doing. And as much as I yell and as much as I criticize you, today we will be proud of you if you pass this resolution, because it's courageous to do it. It's taking on a very powerful organization, and you're saying to them, we don't like what you're doing. Stop it. Thank you.
Mm. Thanks.
Yeah. I'll link it to all my friends and family around the world.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Oh, no more business with criminals. We can stop this.
Yes. Anyone else signed up?
That's all who signed up, unless Angela's back in the room. Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Come on up, Lightning.
My name is Lightning. Commissioner Novick, no to the Convention Center Hotel, no to Walmart. I find that interesting. My position is that Walmart should have a say. You've put a lot of allegations down on this resolution. The media, an author, are those credible sources? Doesn't Walmart have a say? There's $37 million riding on this for Walmart. I go shopping at Walmart. I like Walmart. It's a great store. They do a lot of developments throughout the world. They provide a lot of employment. Yes, everybody would like to have double what they're being paid. That's great. But they provide employment and you have a job. Now, my position on this is that Walmart has a say, and they have a say to respond to this resolution before it's passed. When these allegations are put down on paper, that affects the profitability of Walmart in the future. It can get people to not invest in Walmart. They have a say to this resolution before it is passed. I recommend this resolution does not pass. I recommend a copy of this is faxed to Mike Duke at Walmart. Let him review this. Let him counter back on these allegations, and that's all they are. And let him have a say. They have a lot of money riding in their businesses. They try to keep their people employed. They have a say on this issue. You are not a committee, Commissioner Novick, but yet you targeted today Walmart. And in your resolution, you said, let's create a committee first and then discuss who we don't want to buy. You have gone forward and already targeted Walmart. I think that's inappropriate. They have a say on this issue. Let's be reasonable and let these corporations step forward and defend themselves against you, Commissioner Novick. No on this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, then let's take up the first of the two, 941.
Novick?
Aye.
Prittens?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Novick, for very thoughtfully moving the ball forward again. We had many discussions over the last 4 years on this issue and made some small steps. As you noted, it's very difficult to find responsible investments that don't pass on the investment to some other irresponsible investor. So I think the approach of setting up the committee and looking at all kinds of things that can kill people and that we really shouldn't be with our money supporting people, things that kill people. I would also assume that when the council passes resolutions over the course of a year, that that would be funneled into the committee's deliberations. For instance, our coal resolution, that would, once it's a council policy, that would be information that the committee would be considering for the policy for the next year. So again, thank you for all of your work on this, and I believe that we, it's not necessarily that we're going to get the highest rate of investment, but if we're not thereby killing people, I think that would be a better way to go. Aye.
Fish.
Thanks, Steve, for bringing this forward and for leading the discussion. My wife and I, her through her public pension, me through my 401k, currently have the option of selecting a socially responsible investment. And we have the option of deciding where we want to put our dollars. Today, you are giving the city an option to decide where we put the public's dollars. And I think you've set up a system which gives us an opportunity to make a thoughtful and fact-based decision in the future. But this is the first step. Thanks for bringing this forward, and I'm pleased to join you. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Novick, for leading the charge here for socially responsible investment policies. When I was actually a graduate student at MIT, I represented graduate students on the MIT's Investor Responsibility Committee. And back then, the whole issue was about divesting in companies that do business in South Africa due to apartheid. And, you know, slowly but surely, it worked. You know, apartheid is no longer in South Africa. So you got to start somewhere. I think this is a good basis to make a good start and to do the right thing with our limited pool of investments that we place in the private sector bond market. Aye.
Hales.
You know, I have an interesting facet of my perspective on this issue because I spent the last 10 years working for a big corporation. And it's one we can't invest in because it was owned by the employees. But I came to understand through that experience a number of things. I learned a lot in those 10 years, I hope. But one of the things I learned is there's a huge difference in culture and ethics from one corporation to another. And I was proud to have worked for one whose culture and ethics I thought were commendable and consistent. And there really is a difference. And those are choices that the leadership of those companies make. It's not market forces alone that determine business behavior. That people make choices. And I also came to understand that sometimes companies make choices that may appear to be economically smart, but actually are ruinous. See Lehman Brothers. So there really are choices here, not only on our side of the table, but also on the side of those that are running these companies that we may or may not invest in. So for what it's worth, I saw that up close and personal by working for a corporation that was ethical and that did conform its values to its behavior. And we have that opportunity to do that here, to conform our investment behavior to our community's values, and I think this is a step in that direction. Thank you. Aye. Next one.
Novick?
Aye.
Sorry. Fritz?
I think it's entirely appropriate that we not invest further in Walmart, and their impact on other people's jobs is significant. Their treatment of their employees can be reprehensible. And I only wish it could go further. But I appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's comments on the movement that I, too, was involved in England of divesting from South Africa, the very, very, very small amount that was in our student union account that we took out of Barclays Bank. Mm-hmm. And when Archbishop Desmond Tutu visited over the last 4 years, I got to go hear him at the University of Portland, and he was asked, did that make any difference? And he said, oh, yes, it made all the difference. So those little things that you and I did as students, it's good to know. And that this may seem like a little thing, but what if everybody did it? Then it would be a big thing. Aye.
Britt. Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Thank you. Next one. And let's move on.
We skipped 940.
We skipped 940. We need to go back to that. Thank you.
940, authorize revenue bonds for urban renewal areas.
Second reading and roll call.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. 943.
Tentatively consider the proposal of Legacy Health System and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation from industrial sanctuary to industrial campus and the zoning map designation from IG1, General Industrial 1, to IRD, Institutional Residential, with a design overlay for property in the vicinity of North Kirby Avenue near North Stanton Street, LU13146707.
Carla, just before we vote, Mayor, just truth in advertising, my understanding is we've already tentatively considered, today we're actually adopting the findings. Is that correct?
I think that's what we have in front of us. I was just going to ask that.
So that the title that might be slightly misleading. That I think we took a tentative, but is this now the final action?
I think that's right, because we haven't made any revisions to them. So I think a motion to approve the findings, it would be in order.
So we need to amend. I move that we amend the title to approve the proposal of Legacy Health.
Second.
That's right. Okay. So we'll act on the amendment to the title, please. Roll call.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Good catch, Commissioner Fritz. Aye, Fish.
Now everybody does
wow.
it.
Wow. We'll remember that the next time the mayor commits that same offense. And you look at him with a...
I'm going back to my maiden name. It's just going to be easier.
I'm honored to be confused with you, Commissioner Fritz. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, and now on the item as amended, we're all doing it.
Novick.
Just have to note that I've on numerous occasions been confused with Commissioner Fish myself, so it's not just the confluence of names that causes confusion. Aye.
Me too, actually.
Fritz.
It works better when we just stick to our first names, I think. Aye.
Fish.
I'm very proud to support this today, and as we discussed the last time this issue came up, this paves the way for Legacy to invest $200 million in a new state-of-the-art emergency room that will serve inner Northeast Portland. They're one of our two level two trauma centers, which means when there's a significant emergency or someone is really in trouble, they either go there or they go up to the Hill OHSU. And in paving the way now to make a $200 million investment, we will substantially increase the quality of health care in Northeast Portland, will create a lot of jobs, and will help them unify their campus. This has taken a lot of time, and I particularly want to thank everyone on Jack Graham's team who really worked minor miracles to reconfigure the puzzle after agreeing to move some heavy equipment from this site and to allow Legacy to proceed. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. And item 944.
Amend the comprehensive plan map designation and change zoning of property in the vicinity of North Kirby Avenue near North Stanton Street at the request of Legacy Health System, LU13146707CPZC.
Second reading, roll call.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. 945.
Amend provisions relating to duties of the Gulf Advisory Committee and lifetime passes to Gulf Program employees.
Second reading. Roll call.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
I thank the members of the Gulf Advisory Committee, some of whom have been providing diligent service to the city for over 20 years. I appreciate the conversations that have led up to this and the clarifications that the staff at Parks, particularly Eileen Argentina, was very helpful in helping me as the new commissioner figure out some of these reasonable changes. Aye.
Fish.
You know, this did generate some heated emails and calls. I will say that previously we did curb lifetime passes. This is a further change And I want to be very clear, as you said, Commissioner, we deeply appreciate the volunteer service of folks who serve on this committee, and they actually effectively help us manage an enterprise business, which functions largely without general fund dollars. That said, I think you've come up with a thoughtful proposal, and I will support you. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And then item 946.
Establish employment restrictions for the ombudsman position to further safeguard the integrity and independence of the Office of the Ombudsman.
Auditor and our ombudsman are here. Welcome.
Good morning.
We haven't been on the job for, you know, less than a year. We're already putting restrictions on you. I mean, this is, we're not as friendly an employer, maybe, as you were led to believe. But
they're my idea. Good morning. LaVon Griffin-Vallade, City Auditor, here before you. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. And I'm here only to introduce Margie. She has been here for only a short time, less than 2 years. She's demonstrated her integrity, her strong moral compass, and her ethics on a number of occasions. She's increased the profile of the Ombudsman Office and carried out some very important investigations that have made a difference. The code change before you is another Solinger integrity concept. I fully support it, and I would ask that you do so also. Margie's going to give you the lowdown a little bit more. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Margie Solinger, the Ombudsman for the City of Portland, and I'll keep my remarks brief today. The Ombudsman's Office conducts investigations into complaints about city bureaus. Complaints come from individual members of the public, neighborhood associations, businesses, city employees, and anonymously through the auditor's Open City tip line. The city's ombudsman function has been around since the early 90s, but in 2001, the City Council sagely placed the Ombudsman's Office within the elected auditor's office. This move provided the Ombudsman's Office with the requisite structural separation it needs to conduct impartial investigations and exercise independent judgment. Nonetheless, I occasionally hear from members of the public who want reassurance that I am truly independent, that I operate at arm's length from the bureaus I investigate, and that I am not shying away from challenging or controversial issues. So public perception remains an issue. The proposed amendment to City Code Chapter 3.77 provides additional safeguards for the Ombudsman's Office by limiting employee movement between the Ombudsman's Office and the bureau and the bureaus it investigates. Specifically, the amendment creates pre- and post-employment restrictions, which state that a person may not serve as ombudsman if they were a city employee at any time during the 2 years prior to being selected, and may not subsequently work for the city for at least 2 years after serving as ombudsman. Other ombudsman's offices have similar restrictions, such as the National Taxpayer Advocate, which is the IRS ombudsman. These restrictions empower the taxpayer advocate to do her job without worrying about future job prospects at the agency, and they also reassure taxpayers that the advocate is uncompromised in her ability to serve as the taxpayer's watchdog. Portlanders likewise deserve reassurance that the ombudsman position is uncompromised. It is important to impose these restrictions now, before there is a pressing need, rather than wait to add them once a problem arises and where public trust has been damaged. That's all the remarks that I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
I have a question, and that is I commend you, and I think you're doing a fabulous job, and also I appreciate the auditor's support. Why exempt employment by the auditor's office before and after? That seems to further get people worried that perhaps you're not independent of the auditor's office.
Well, I don't think I am, and so I don't tend to conduct investigations into complaints about the auditor's office precisely because the auditor is the one elected official that I am responsible to.
So who does? If there's a complaint about the elections division or whatever, who investigates those?
Those would be referred up the management chain as complaints about other bureaus might be as a first resort. I haven't encountered that, though, and so I'm not sure. I mean, I guess there would be an option of referring it to an outside entity or to a different elected official's office, but it hasn't arisen before. This particular exemption is also in the National Taxpayer Advocate United States Code, and basically I think what it does is recognizes that the other functions within the auditor's office are generally oversight functions, and so it's not necessarily a bad thing as far as the public interest to allow that person to kind of move within that particular department.
Can I, Mayor, can I just, you know, this issue has been framed in another context recently, and that is the a proposed water district contains language which says that if you are a city employee or you've served on a utility review board or you've provided services that relate to water